You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And joined today by Senator Doug Jones. Thanks for making time for us.
Hey, my pleasure, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
It's a lot of stuff to talk about today, so I want to get right into it. And first of all, let's talk about the Medicaid expansion. Now, this is a debate that it came up in the past, of course, in our state. Now there seems to be a little more traction in Montgomery on this. What, from a federal perspective, do you see here for Medicaid expansion for the state of Alabama? And
well,
why?
I think it's most important for the state. I mean, you can still expand Medicaid right now, and I think the objections in the past have been twofold. One was purely a political objection. I mean, clearly, most people acknowledge that it was a political objection dealing with the Affordable Care Act. The second thing, which has some obviously some merit to it, is how we're going to pay for it. What's going to be the cost to the state of Alabama? But now we've got 7 years worth of data to show that states that have expanded Medicaid have seen an economic expansion. It has saved hospitals. It has improved health outcomes in the state. And so one of the things that we're trying to get pushed up here is what we call the SAME Act, which is a Medicaid Expansion Act that would really give states like Alabama, there are 14 states that have not expanded Medicaid, a second look. And when they do that, if they would do that, if we can get this bill passed, it would give states like Alabama the ability to expand Medicaid where you got 100% reimbursement over 3 years to give the state the opportunity to be good stewards of the money and try to start expanding and phase in the reimbursement. That would affect some 166,000 people in Alabama or more. It would help outcomes. It would help the bottom line for these rural hospitals that we're losing left and right. And the main thing is it's going to give a whole bunch of people access to health care that really don't have that good access right now.
Okay, Senator, it's a 100% payback?
It would be a 100% match for 3 years, and then it would go. That was what the Affordable Care Act did for so many states. And you know, Sean, I mean, we're not talking about just states that are Democrat versus Republican. I mean, even Mike Pence, when he was the governor of Indiana, expanded Medicaid in the state of Indiana. Louisiana has expanded. Senator McConnell's state of Kentucky has expanded. So there's a number of states. Actually, it wasn't Louisiana. I don't think it was Arkansas that expanded. A number of these states have done this, and they've taken advantage of it because it brings money back in. I mean, this is an investment in one of the biggest economic drivers for the state of Alabama and for the country. Healthcare is a huge economic driver.
Okay, so the 3 years, and then it decreases to 95% funding, 94%, 93%,
right.
And then it sits at 90. Would you have any numbers in front of you? What does that mean? Like, so in the year that it's 90% federal coverage, Alabama's got 10%. Based on today's numbers, how much money are we talking about for
you
Alabama?
I really don't have those numbers at the tip of my fingertips, but what you've also got to factor in over that time is the economic benefit that it's going to bring into the state. Right now, we are paying Medicaid dollars out. Every individual in the state of Alabama is putting Medicaid dollars in, and they're going to other states that have expanded Medicaid. We need to keep some of those dollars home. So I don't have those right at my fingertips, but I can tell you the Pew Trust and a number of these folks that have looked at these that the studies about how much money that has been made and the economic factor. Let's put it in a different way. Every year, our economic development team, which has been doing a great job over the last 20 years, gives tax incentives and tax breaks to companies who want to invest in Alabama. This is the same thing. We're giving incentives to people to come in and to keep their hospitals open, doctors to come into these areas. And when you do that, it is one of the economic drivers of these rural areas.
Okay, so it's interesting, too, talking about it now, because strange thing, I talk about this a whole bunch. If we took a time machine back 10 years ago, the bills that are in Montgomery now that are Republican backed bills and carried by Republicans, people will be shocked. I mean, we're talking about the gas tax increase that went through.
Right.
Of course, we're talking about the lotto here and even Republican support for the expansion of Medicaid.
Right. Yeah, no, look, this shouldn't be It should have never been, Sean. It should have never been a political issue. It should have been a health issue. It should have been an economic issue. And I understand the reluctance about how are we going to pay for it down the road. That's a good thing. Even though people like David Bronner and all the economists said this is really going to make Alabama money, you're going to bring in billions and billions of dollars based on this. I get the economics of it, but now we've got the evidence to show that in the long run we're going to get not only money coming in, but think about the better health outcomes and how that will also help the bottom line for the state of Alabama. It's just a cascading effect, and I think right now people need to look at these issues not as whether it's Republican or Democrat, but they need to look at these issues. What is it going to do for the state of Alabama and the people of the state of Alabama? And let's get away from the political football.
Yeah, but at the same time, people look at that, and then they'll turn around and look at any given session in Montgomery, and we don't have money to do anything, it seems like. I mean, we have a general fund where we're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Well, it is a problem. I mean, you get what you pay for. We've got incredibly low taxes. People like that. I get that. But people also expect services from the state and from the federal government. And when you do things like this, when you look at the services that people want, they've got to figure out, how are we going to best get that? How are we going to best pay for this? How can we make sure that we get the services that the state of Alabama can provide? And again, I think you got to look long term. You got to look long ball here. If you can help the outcomes, the health outcomes of the people of the state of Alabama, you are ultimately going to save the state of Alabama money, whether it's Medicaid, whether it's Medicare, whether it is just general health outcomes in general. That is going to be a big boost to us. And we've got to look at it on a personal level as well.
All right. If you're just joining us, talking to Senator Doug Jones, also introducing legislation now to prevent hate crimes. Don't we have hate crime bills? Don't we have hate crime laws, you know, that are codified right now?
Well, we do have hate crimes. This is not codifying hate crimes anymore. What it's trying to do is to try to get another look and an examination by the Department of Justice as to the social media effect on hate crimes, the crimes themselves, not classifying. Now, I will tell you, we've got a lot of hate crimes. There's hate crimes on the books. There's hate crimes in the state of Alabama. They don't get reported that way a lot of times. There's a lot of reasons that communities are reluctant to report a hate crime. But when you're dealing with the proliferation of social media the way that we have in the last 10 years, really almost the last 5 years, there is no question, in my view, as a former prosecutor, that there is a correlation between some of the speech that is going on on social media and some of the pure hate crimes that we've seen. We have seen such a dramatic rise, particularly in anti-Semitic crimes, Muslim crimes, African-American. There has been an increase in that over the last 5 years. What this bill is doing is going to try to look and see, is there a correlation? Is there something that we can learn from the social media? The last time we've looked at anything like this was 1993, and our world is a far different place now than it was in 1993.
Senator Jones, I would worry, though, like, it's always the devil within the details. I think there's an example you could roll out easily that everybody would nod and agree, okay, yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, we see things manifested, and these are private companies or publicly traded companies in social media that will put their own definition, you know, that kind of seems to float on what hate speech is, right?
Right.
And goes in and says, this is hate speech, and it may not meet the standard you're talking about.
Well, no, look, there is obviously concerns about free speech. There is no question about that. But I've got enough confidence in the Department of Commerce, the Department of Justice, to be able to cut through that. They understand where this comes from. We're not talking about necessarily prosecuting a crime as a hate crime. We're talking about trying to just identify and look at the correlation between what we clearly know to be hate-based criminal acts and social media and the growth of media in general.
And you think there's a direct corollary between the two?
You know, Sean, let me tell you, I'll give you a good example. I've been giving this speech, I haven't been for the last few years. I started giving this speech when I was a United States attorney in Birmingham. I would do PowerPoints with the rise of the Internet at the time. You can directly track the rise of neo-Nazi and white supremacist sites on the Internet that absolutely advocated for lone wolves to get out there and commit crimes. Those can all be documented. Now we've gotten to a point where between Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all this, that's taken this to a new level. It's not a site, it's not an organization, but it's individuals. And so, look, we started looking at this a long time ago, and I can tell you there was, I don't have it in front of me, but I can remember showing a slide back 15 years ago where a hate site and a leading member of the neo-Nazi in America was out there talking about committing crimes against Jews. And he ended by saying, good hunting lone wolves. Well, that's the kind of thing that's pretty obvious, and I think it can be documented. We just haven't done it in a long time.
Okay, but those things, I think, are the easy example. I think you'll have most people nod and agree. What I would worry about is, given that, if somebody disagrees with what somebody says, and I mean, this is, I go through this because I see things that, even if I disagree with something and I find it important what they're saying, I don't want to ban their ability to say it.
No,
I think
you push things
underground.
I agree with that, unless it is inciting. Right. There's one thing to be critical, to give you forms of expression. It's another thing to incite people to go out and commit crimes. That line is a little bit easier to distinguish. And I completely agree with you. I'm a big First Amendment guy. I do not want to curtail people's ability to give thoughts and expressions. But when they are actively trying to seek violence, that's a different issue. And it is a little bit easier to discern.
All right. A couple of things. We're going to run to the news break real fast and then come back. A couple more questions, if that's all right.
You got it. Thank you.
All right. Because, there's questions I've got, and I got a bunch in here on the text line. All right. Coming right back, more with Senator Doug Jones, and we'll get your questions. If you're stacking them up, you put them on the text line at 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1248 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And Senator Doug Jones, our guest this half hour. Thanks for making time for us, and we have a lot of questions to get into as well on votes in Washington that are not as directly, well, maybe as directly linked back here to Alabama, because you were a no vote on the Green New Deal the other day. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. That was a... I watched the video. I watched Senator Schumer looking at you. You looking at him, and you were a no vote.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think that the new Green Deal is anything more than an aspirational way to start a climate change debate. And let me say, I think it is, because it was way too far to address things that I don't think really had anything to do with climate, and a whole bunch. It was a checklist for a lot of people. What I do think, though, is that we need to have a little bit more sense of urgency with regard to where we are on the climate and the planet. Clearly, things are changing, and we need to address it. And for so long, Sean, people just argued about who caused it, and they were pointing fingers. And I think now we're looking at both businesses, the political circles, interest groups. Everybody is looking and saying, okay, let's get past who caused this, and what can we do? And let's do some reasonable things that we can do, because I think we can use this opportunity to actually create jobs in new energy, new clean energy. We can use this to our benefit, but it's got to be phased in. You cannot completely just start flipping switches, which is the way I thought the new Green Deal would do it.
Yeah, it seemed to be a lot wider ranging. Well, first of all, wide ranging on the environmental front, but it seemed to move into a lot of areas outside of just environmental policy.
It did, for sure. And I understand some colleagues voting present as a form of protest, but I generally try not to cast protest votes.
All right. This one, back to our discussion before the news break here. David says, what happens if the Affordable Care Act is struck down and we have expanded Medicaid and Medicare?
Well, I think we've still got the issues. The same act would still apply. You can still do some things. I think that is a legitimate question. I'm hoping that that's not going to happen. If that happens, to David's point, if that happens, it's going to cause chaos in the entire healthcare marketplace. There is going to be a lot of people in Alabama that suffer. There's going to be a lot of people across the country that suffer. I cannot for the life of me figure out at this point where we are with the Affordable Care Act. Why are we not looking to try to take the concerns that some people have and address those concerns? The president says he wants to protect people with pre-existing conditions. How are you going to do that? I mean, we've got this lawsuit pending out there with no alternative plan except on prescription drugs, and that's something that I think there's going to be some bipartisan movement this year, is to lower the prescription drug prices and try to get that into the Affordable Care Act somehow.
It goes back, though. The tough thing is every year that's gone on, the pragmatist will dominate the discussion, because you go back to, I'd like to ask you, on an idealistic front, is it the province of government to require American citizens to purchase something?
Well, I don't know if it's the province, but one of the things that I think the Affordable Care Act to do was to try to figure out, we live in a capitalistic society, and if we want to let the market handle these things the way it should be doing, we got to get more people into the market that are young, and we got to get folks in the market that are healthy, that are willing to buy insurance and do some of those things. I don't have all the answers on that. I think that the mandate was one way to do that. I have not heard anybody else really propose something of trying to get those folks into the market that is going to help lower the cost of health care premiums. So I'm wide open to discussions about that. I don't like mandates any more than the next person, but at the same time, I think when you're trying to do something for the good of the entire population, that, you know, sometimes it's at least an alternative that has to be explored. It may be a potential that we have a public option that folks can buy into with a public option. That's one thing that's looked about, and that may be a way that you can do that in an affordable way, and it would encourage people to do that. Right now, we have trouble getting young people into the healthcare system because they think they're never going to get sick, they're never going to get hurt, they're never going to die. And unfortunately, we know that that's not the case.
Well, eventually they will do all those, but you know, when they're young, yeah, I mean, they, and even the way it's laid out now, you can game the system, you know, on this, and I mean, look at what the penalties are, because it was weak-willed, because there wasn't full-throated support for this. The penalties aren't enough to, you know, somebody can play the system and not get health insurance, get it once they have an issue, and still not be out of pocket more than they would have been.
Sure.
You know?
You know, look, I mean, every system that Congress or the Alabama legislature creates, every system that private companies create, somebody's going to find a way to game it. We got to do the best that we can do. And I think that was an effort. Instead of just throwing the entire baby out with the bathwater, we need to start trying to figure out the best way to get people into this market and lower costs. You get lower insurance costs when you have a bigger, healthier pool of people that are paying in to the market. There's no question about that. That's economics 101.
Yeah, but what about that? Was, you know, we were told that this this would bring down what it cost us for health insurance from the get-go, and I know you probably hear from a lot of the constituents, and I'd be one of them. And you know, I've done nothing but pay more since this was passed.
It has had some effect with people, particularly employer-based health plans that did go up. Those have somewhat been stabilized right now, but there was also a lot of uncertainty when those employee plans were going up, because nobody knew. If you remember, most of the increases in that occurred during a time when Congress was working to try to repeal and replace with no real replacement plan, and uncertainty creates a lot of problems in the market as well. So people were increasing, you know, their premiums for a rainy day. That has settled down a fair amount, I think, now. I think there's still some modest increases, but not near like we saw initially when everybody was still talking about completely getting away from the Affordable Care Act.
Well, yeah, it's the new, right, beyond the new normal, the increases haven't been much, but it went up so fast, you know, so much so quickly that it set this benchmark now at a higher level, and people are still reeling from that. So, I mean, I think that's everyday, that's kitchen table economics, right?
Yeah,
that's everyday, how much money I have.
I agree with you. And the other thing we're trying to do in the health committee, and this is, I think, and Senator Alexander from Tennessee is the chairman of that committee, and we've been trying to have hearings of what can we do to bring down health care cost in general. I mean, a lot of our health care costs is driven by prescription drug prices, and so we're looking at that specifically. Then, and I think ways that we can try to figure out the best way to lower the cost of health care in general is another way that we can help lower those premiums. It is a complicated mess, Sean. Everybody knows it. It is a complicated mess, and it ended up being more political than it ended up being practical.
All right. This one down here in southwest Alabama, big deal. And heck, they make it a big deal elsewhere in the state as well. The I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. What's the deal here? Why are we having to pay this? Does the senator know why we're getting stuck with a toll bridge on I-10 over the Mobile River and the Bayway?
Well, it's my understanding nothing has been completely decided about that. I know that the city is looking still for a lot of federal monies to try to help. Senator Shelby and I both are working on that to try to see what we can come up with to help push that along. I think we're still too far down the road. I mean, we're not far enough down the road to see final determinations on if there will be a toll. The odds are, I think there probably will be, but then how much is that going to be? Is it going to be something where people pay passes, you know, buy yearly passes that are going to be a lot less? The problem, again, here's the problem we face, continually face, is we've got a situation out there on I-10 that is really bad. People, everybody understands it. They know it. So the question is, how do we pay for something going forward? Do we pay for it by the people that are using it? Do we pay for it with taxpayer money from up and down and around the country? It's the age-old problem. We got a serious problem there in Mobile that needs to be addressed, and it's going to cost a boatload of money. How do we best pay for it?
Even though I have seen, and there are a few places where there has been precedent set, but I tell you, everybody's initial reaction was, how are you tolling an interstate? You know, how are you doing this? Something that people even would say, okay, well, the bridge, that's new, but the current way we go through the tunnel, you're tolling that too.
Yeah, you know, but Sean, let me tell you, here's the thing that what you're seeing more and more, and that is whether it's an interstate or whether it's a state highway, more and more you're looking at private and public partnerships. And if you get into a private partnership, they're going to want to have a profit. They're going to want to make money off of it. They're not into it just for the good, and they're not using taxpayer money. So there are more and more folks advocating for these public-private partnerships, and when you do that, there's going to be more and more toll roads, whether it's on an interstate, whether it's on, you know, the Gulf Shores Parkway, you know, that over in Baldwin County. There's going to be more and more of those. Unfortunately, Alabama is not really set to do a lot of that in our state, but that's exactly why the I-10 corridor is being looked at that way, because it connects, you know, all the way to New Orleans to the beaches of Florida and goes right through through Mobile and Baldwin County.
All right, and I hate that we ran out of time because I have some other questions about Alabama Democrat Party politics, but maybe I can get you back on soon to talk about that going forward.
You got it, Sean. Anytime, just let us know.
All right, Senator Doug Jones, and we're coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.